All right, wonderful. So let's go ahead and start. We've got 45 minutes. And like I said, let's keep this interactive. Let's make it fun. We're all here to learn from each other. I don't have all the answers. My name is Lance Spitzner. I am the training director for SAN Securing the Human Program. Excuse me. My job and passion is working with organizations around the world, build high-impact awareness programs, really address the human factor. Now, I've been InfoSec for about 15-plus years. I actually have a geek background, all right, so I can bond with the geeks here. I started with Sun Microsystems. My job was pen testing firewalls, network forensics and stuff. So I actually speak Solaris. I'm not much good on Windows. And then I did about cyber intel work for about 10 years with the HoneyNet project, honeypots, things like that. Well, in my research on cyber intel about 5 years ago, I noticed the bad guys were really shifting on the human element. You know, nowadays, the easiest way to infect a computer is to ask someone to infect it. So my passion really moved to the human element, and I got very fortunate to work with SANS full-time, helping organizations around the world. So we've collected a lot of lessons learned, and I like to share those lessons learned. And what we've done here is extracted a lot of the lessons learned for the EDU community. What are some of the top human risks we're seeing in the EDU world, and how is the EDU world addressing it, how we're seeing it? And like I said, the reason we want this interactive is so you guys can share with each other. So question time. Remember I said one of the best ways to get a group engaged is ask them a question? So show of hands, who here has a security awareness program? Raise. All right, keep the hands up. Keep them up. Look, most of the room. How many of you like your awareness program? Now keep the hands up if you like it. Now wait. If you're in charge, it doesn't count for your awareness program. I think we maybe have one hand up. So man, your hand is up. When we start getting into the lessons learned, share.
No.
So one of the neat things here, though, is this, is that's one of the biggest problems. And one of the common fallacies is most people think most organizations don't have an awareness program or are not addressing the human issue. Most EDUs do have an awareness program. And just through no fault of your own or things like that, but most people don't like them, they're not working. So what we're going to cover is how can we make an awareness program work? Not how to create one, but how to make it have an impact and change behavior. Because that's where my passion is. So one of the things we can do is if you ever have any questions, you can follow me on my blog, get me on Twitter, or simply email me also. I like to share. Now, first of all, before we get into the solution, let's get into the problem. And this is one of the most effective ways I've been able to communicate the problem, especially to such a geeky academic group. I get excited when I see no ties in the audience. When there's no ties, that means I can start getting geeky. So think about it, folks. For the past 15, 20 years, when we think security, we think about using technology to secure technology. Come on, a lot of you are old-timers here. 15, 20 years ago, you know, it was the wild, wild west of, you know, Code Red, Slammer, things like that. Back then, it was really easy to hack into computers, and we felt a lot of pain. So we in the industry and Microsoft invested a lot of resources to build secure operating systems by default. Nowadays, when you start up a default operating system, think about it, Windows 7, Windows 8, firewall on by default, minimized services, memory randomization, even a free antivirus, things like that. Think about it. If you put a default install of Windows 7 or Windows 8 on the internet today, it would take months, if not years, for it to be compromised. Now, the risk dramatically increases when the human touches the keyboard. And why is that? Well, think of it in these terms. Operating systems store, process, and transfer information. You and I store, process, and transfer information. We are all nothing more than the human operating system. Human OS. The problem with the human OS is we've done nothing to secure it. It's wide open. It's happy to share. It's not because this operating system is stupid. I hate that terminology. It's because we've done nothing to secure this operating system. This bad guy is still running in the days of Windows NT, Solaris 2.5, Linux 5, whatever you want to call it. So what we want to do is how do you secure this operating system? And ultimately, it comes to changing behavior. Now, why? Remember, we started this with how many have an awareness program? Woo, most hands went up. How many of you like your awareness program? Most hands went down. This is the reason why. What ends up happening is most awareness programs are extremely, extremely minimal. They're totally compliance driven. Think about this human operating system perspective I talked about, human OS. How much are you investing to secure the standard computer in your university? Antivirus, full disk encryption, two-factor authentication, antivirus, a variety of technologies. Now, how much are we paying in licensing, support, updates, things like that? It could be $50, $100, $200 per system. Now, how much are we investing in securing a person, the human operating system? Hear those crickets chirping? That's part of the problem. I'm sure many of you have no resources, no investment in securing the human OS. And the problem we've hit now is this. We've invested in so much in technology, it's diminishing returns. Because the bad guys are just going to bypass technology, as we know, and send an email, shoot out a Twitter feed, instant message, or if anything else, you pick up the phone. So what we need to do is start investing at some point, just not a lot, but we need to do something about this OS, or it's still like Windows NT, wide, wide open. Now, if the human operating system is an OS, what are the vulnerabilities? I mean, it's not buffer overflow. It's not SQL injection. It's how we're programmed. The problem is this. How we think and operate was based on our ancestors in the plains of Africa 100,000 years ago. This programming has not kept up with the changes of 21st century cyber. So as a result, you and I overestimate risk for things very visual. We overestimate risk for things we're not in control. Let me give you a classic example. You're traveling and you're taking your family on vacation. You decide to go to the beach to go swimming in the ocean. Now, what's the number one thing people are afraid of when swimming in the ocean?
Sharks.
Sharks, thank you. To show you here, I'm a great mind reader. Have the slide already. Sharks. Now, any statisticians out here? There's got to be a couple. Come on, this is academia. Statistically speaking, what are the odds of you being killed by a shark? Very small. Well, sorry, somebody had a number? Yeah, like something like the lottery. Okay, according to the Book of Odds, the odds of you getting killed by this guy are about 250, 300 million to one. So on average, one person a year is killed by a shark. So we overestimate the risk because this guy's pretty visual. We overestimate the risk because we're not in control. He strikes when he wants to. Now, what is something that you can think of that we probably underestimate the risk of at the ocean? What's far more likely to kill us at the ocean, but we didn't think about it? Drowning, riptide, jellyfish, sunstroke. Allow me to show you something statistically speaking twice as likely to kill you at the ocean, but you did not think of it. The vending machine. Statistically speaking, according to the Book of Odds, your odds of getting killed by this are 112 million to one. Statistically speaking, 3 to 4 people die every year because of vending machines. Now, how does the vending machine hunt and kill its prey? Because how do these people die? All right, so they put their change in, and then what happens?
Nothing.
You get stuck. So what do? They shake it, and they rock it. In the process of rocking it, wham, it crushes them. Now, think about it. They are in control, so they underestimate the risk. Getting killed by this is not very visual. So what ends up happening? We really underestimate the risk. Now think about the internet. We are in control. We decide what websites we go to, when to stick in the USB stick, things like that. Underestimate risk. Getting hacked is not very visual. It's like heart disease, the silent killer. We underestimate the risk. So what happens is this. Most people have no clue that they're a target, have no idea what the risks are, and as a result, or even if they know there's risks, they don't know what behaviors to do to protect themselves. So as a result, awareness and education can change their behaviors. You just need to do it in a way that engages them and motivates them to change their behavior. So that's what we're going to talk about. How do we change people's behavior? And the thing is we've got to be realistic. You've got a limited budget. You've got faculty. You've got staff. You've got students. You've got student employees. You've got all sorts of different networks. You've got different compliance standards. So what we have to do is, yes, there's the science of changing behavior, but that science has got to meet the reality of our organization. So how do we combine the two? So first of all, what are some of the unique things about EDUs? It's very interesting working with you folks because what you end up finding is you have different roles. As many of you know, you've got students. I never thought of it. Randy Maricini did a great job. He said, do you realize we're an ISP? Like, what are you talking about? Every year we have 5,000, 10,000 new students bringing all their personal devices. And the light bulb went off of me. Like, yeah, you're right. So you're an ISP, you're doing research, but you've also got corporate information and all sorts of private data, things like that. What's interesting is you folks tend to be very early adopters of technology. Obviously, a lot of times you're the ones developing the technology. The whole idea of BYOD, once again, I mean, corporations are freaking out over BYOD in a lot of ways. You guys have been doing BYOD for, what, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years for a while now. I never realized how heavily regulated the entire EDU community was, until I got started. I mean, I thought it was just FERPA. Oh, no, you got GLBA, and then you got HIPAA, and then you've got all sorts of other ones, PCI DSS, things like that. So, and then obviously also the limited budget challenge. So how do we take all these realities and how do we reduce the human risks? Well, one of the first things we have to identify is what are the top human risks in the EDU environment? One of the problems with a lot of awareness programs that fail is they do no risk analysis. What are we going to focus on? What behaviors do we want to change? They just randomly pick the topic of the day and throw it out there. So one of the things we're going to want to have a high-impact awareness program is have a laser focus on only the key human risks that have the greatest risk to our organization. So what I'm going to do is show you a list of seven that we tend to find the largest human risks to EDUs. Not all seven apply to your organization. Every school, every university is going to be different. I mean, my wife worked at Rush University Hospital in Chicago, so it was a university, but it was also a hospital, which can be very, very different from your university, your school, things like that. But here's a trend, and we saw some crossover with the rest of the other industries, but some things that are unique. So one of the things is obviously BYOD, all these insecure devices. What's interesting is when we rolled out for one organization, we rolled out an awareness program, and after the initial training, we asked everybody two questions. What's the number one thing that surprised you? What's the number one thing that you learned? And what behavior did you change as a result of it? And what fascinated, is it going to be passwords? Is it going to be about APT? Is it going to be about spear phishing? No, the number one thing that all these people said was they had no idea that updating secured computers. They thought updating was only about features. And as a result, they are now going to far more actively keep their systems updated and secure, which is obviously a key component of BYOD, things like that. Obviously, now, sensitive data, you guys are about the only other industry that's about as much of a nightmare is the healthcare community. And so worst case scenario is when you have a university that's also doing healthcare. All right, is anybody doing that here? Because then you get, that's just, probably the worst would be a university that's doing research in healthcare. Well, actually, no, the nice thing about research, folks, is you can anonymize the PHI. Anyways, it gets really, really messy. And the problem you end up having is the whole concept of sensitive data. So cardholder data, PHI, PNI, PII, SSN, things like that. So a lot of times people don't even know what the rules are, let alone how to follow them, what the types of data, things are like that. Obviously, email, phishing, spear phishing, that tends to be one of the top ones there. I've got a question here. How many of you feel spear phishing is a problem in your organization, where you're actually targeted? Wow, about half. That's more than I would have thought. And now, we work a lot with defense industry, Raytheon, Honeywell, General Dynamics, Lockheed. Obviously, spear phishing is a huge issue. So I'm just curious, why would somebody spear phish a university? Anybody care to share? Go ahead.
How many defense contractors list the key decision makers
Oh, okay.
There's a real competition where, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good. Oh. Margaret's on it. Tucson talk.
Sorry.
So repeat the question, which I forgot to do.
My point, why do we think we're targeted or we're a good target? Is that your question, right?
Yeah.
We have this competition between we can't hide away who those key decision makers are, and their information's out there to be contacted easily on the web.
So in other words, you make yourselves an easy target?
Yeah, we put a big target on our head.
Anybody else care to share why they feel they're a big spear phishing target? They're like, hell no, I'm not going to share that.
We have money, too.
You have money, too. All right, sounds good. What's interesting is this. I put social networking as one of the top seven. And what I'm tending to find is this, is with a lot of organizations, I originally thought when they said social networking, it was people falling victim to scams, you know, malicious links, things like that. What I'm finding is, no, it's this. People are sharing far too much information on social networking sites. And it's not that they do a big post and they release everything. It's bits and pieces, bits and pieces. And the bad guys just automate it, harvest it, and then have a profile. So what we're finding is with social networking and things like that is people are releasing too much information, making their organization a really easy target. So one of the things we do is, like, when we're talking about APT and spear phishing, it's not just about the attack method, but it's also about making yourself a really easy target. One of the other big ones we're seeing is obviously cloud. I mean, if you really want to upset a lot of CISOs, I just slip in the word Dropbox. And people start cringing and getting mad or stuff like that. So how many people have Dropbox on their network? How many out there like to think they don't, but they do? Now, what's interesting, too, finally, is password use. And what we're finding on the password side, it's just not the whole idea of complexity or password length or passphrases. But we're finding is password reuse is a really big problem. One password for all their accounts or one password for all the administrators to use, things like that. So what ends up happening here is we tend to think passwords is just complexity, but it's how they use the password, reuse the password. What we're starting to see is organizations are realizing people are overwhelmed and going through the use of allowing people to use password managers. How many people allow password managers at their school? Okay, quite a few. Good. Thank you. There's nothing more frustrating than I see an awareness program telling employees to have a separate password for every account, but then not giving them any tools or technology to manage all those accounts. I mean, I have over 100. I'm sure many of you do also. So those are just some interesting trends we're seeing. Obviously, copyright, plagiarism, that's one that tends to be very unique to you folks. So what you're going to have to do is identify what are these top human risks to our organization. Now, when it comes to awareness and education to help mitigate these human risks, I tend to find three common misconceptions. And there's a lot of big debate on this today. All right. So the whole idea here, the solution is this. Like I said, we want to change behaviors. We want to educate people on these behaviors. It's not just a technology problem. I'm not saying it's the human issue. I'm not saying it's the IT issue. We need all these layers. It's just my concern is we focus so much on IT and so little on human. And when it comes to addressing the human issue, especially in the technology world, a lot of time the biggest blockers I see to an awareness program are security people because of these three misconceptions. The first one I get, and I've butted heads with a couple in the awareness in the security community. Dave Itell and I are just every week we bump heads on this. Awareness has never worked. And what they're looking at is old school awareness programs that are driven by compliance. You know, let's make the auditors happy so we have a PowerPoint presentation once a year. Or we have a quarterly newsletter. Come on, that's not going to change behavior. That'll keep the auditor happy. But I want to change behavior. And the problem is most awareness programs in the past have been only about compliance, designed from the ground up only to keep auditors happy. Those will not work because they were never designed to work. I'm starting to see a new trend, especially in the past 2 years. This is really ramping up, where organizations are redesigning their awareness program from the ground up to change behavior. The second one is people will say, Lance, no matter how much I teach or train people, somebody always falls victim. One of the things I found, for example, is phishing. You know, phishing was one of our top human risks. big believer of doing phishing campaigns, phishing people, things like that. If done right, it works very well. And I've seen where you can get the percentage that fall victim to under 5%. I mean, I do it at Sands. We eat our own dog food. I'm responsible phishing all Sands employees every month. And we've gotten it down to about 5%. By the way, here is a metric. You know you're a good security awareness officer when none of your employees trust your email. So when you start emailing people and they call you, Lance, is this really you? You're doing good. No. But I'll never be able to get it below 3, 4, 5%. And there's a variety of reasons why. I mean, I can tell you how I almost fell victim to one of my own phishing assessments. But, I mean, think about it. You send out a UPS phish. Well, there happened to be a small percentage that day that was expecting a package. You send out an email, a UPS phish, and it was the person's first day at work. Or they clicked on the wrong thing, or things like that. Awareness doesn't fail if, you know, you get it down to about 5%. Awareness is a control to reduce risk, to mitigate risk, not eliminate risk. Awareness is really nothing more than firewalls, antivirus, you know, intrusion detection. All it is a control applied to the human operating system. It blows my mind why people in the security community hold awareness to a different standard. I think awareness is tremendously effective. Give me any other control that can eliminate 90 or reduce risk to less than 5%. Antivirus can't, firewalls can't, things like that. So I think it's actually a very excellent metric demonstrating the power. Finally, I tend to find awareness is only about prevention, the human firewall. Why are we limiting ourselves? Why not extend it to the human sensor? In fact, MITRE is doing some wonderful research in this. We're doing this at SANS, and we're seeing this at other awareness programs. Teach people not only how to detect and prevent attack, but when there is an incident, how to report it. Remember that 5% that failed in the phishing assessment? What happens if just a couple of those people, when they clicked on the link, go, oh man, maybe I shouldn't have done that. That looks like it might have been an attack. I'll report it. So one of the big trends I'm seeing is awareness programs are also focusing a lot on detection and response. You know, the whole concept of resilience. And one of the best ways to really visualize this is we worked with a community group of about 200 awareness officers, EDU, but also other industries. And the problem was, how do we visualize awareness programs, where we are and where we go? And what we have is 5 different levels of maturity: lower left, least mature; lower upper right, most mature. And as you saw with the show of hands, vast majority of organizations are here. They have an awareness program, but it's compliance focused. And that's why none of you liked your awareness program. It's a once a year death by PowerPoint, all right, written by a lawyer. Wow, that's exciting stuff. What we really want to do is take organizations ultimately to metrics, but the biggest shift is right here. This is really where we're going to focus on, where we're focusing here. How do we take this to the next level? You're compliant, but let's pump up the volume and now change behavior and ultimately change culture. So one of the first things we did is we tried to figure out as a community how to do this. And here is the answer for you, right here. It's all in one single slide. All right, there will be a quiz on this afterwards. All right, step back. It's actually not that bad. Remember the slide previous had 5 different stages, had this awareness maturity model. This is nothing but the same thing, except under each of the 5 stages, we listed all the steps to achieve that stage. So you can use this as a roadmap, as a framework to help really build a stronger awareness program. You don't have to do all the steps, only the ones that apply. And really all we're doing is asking you a lot of questions. When I used to do firewalls, it didn't matter what industry, what organization, 90 to 95% of the rules in my firewall are the same. Technology is the same for every organization because bits and bytes are bits and bytes. People are really different, and this is why our awareness is different than most security controls. Every organization's awareness program is going to look very different. Your culture is different, your requirements are different, your structure is different. As a result, I can't tell you how to build your awareness program, but I can provide you the questions to ask, and by answering them, you will build a higher impact program. Now, for this poster is in digital format. It's a free resource. You can download it from our website. We've actually printed copies. If you want a copy, We actually have a bunch stacked in the back, so you can grab and hang it in your organization. If we're out of copies, Krista, raise your hand. See Krista over there? Lovely Krista over there. So if we're out of copies at the end, just give her your email address and we'll ship you one of these also. What we're trying to do is get you so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Everything's there. It's as simple as possible for an organization to build a high impact awareness program. So now what are these questions you have to answer? What are some of the key points on this maturity model? Well, one of the biggest problems I find is this. Organizations just jump right in and have no plan. So what we need is a plan. But before we have a plan, you need a project charter. Do I have any PMPs out here? One. Okay. So you're like, they're supposed to hold the hand high with pride.
It's expired.
Yeah, that's what my wife's. What does it stand for?
Project Management.
They're professional. I always forget what the last P is. This is part of the PMP process. And the whole idea of project charter is it actually makes sense. Before you put the plan together, make sure you and senior management have common expectations. So, for example, who's in charge of the awareness program? This is a harder question than you might think. I was on a conference call last week helping an organization of 20,000 people structure and plan their awareness program. First half hour was the company debating who was in charge of their awareness program. All right? I'm like, whoa, okay. What's the scope? Is it just faculty and staff, or is it faculty, staff, and student employees? Is it faculty, staff, and student employees, and students? Things like that. The reason you need to know scope, and then is it just the main campus, or is it different departments? Is it, you know, sometimes, you know, universities will have campuses all over the state or even the country, or maybe in other countries. Is anybody here representing a campus outside the United States? So which country?
UAE.
Well, you're Sharjah, right?
Yeah. Oof.
Anybody here been to Sharjah? Yeah. Says a lot. No, I've been to Sharjah. What else? We had another country here.
Canada.
Oh, yeah. Anybody else from a real another country here? That's just a state. No, sorry. Spain. Yeah, there you go. Canada, Spain. Okay, I'll take Spain. So what ends up happening here, though, is what different areas are you going to apply the awareness program? So we need to identify that scope. What are your goals? Is it just, you know, what are the compliance standards? Is it FERPA? Is it, you know, maybe even NERC? Who knows? HIPAA? When do you want the training to start? So you want to be sure you identify all these questions. So what's really neat, what we've done with this poster, is every time we ask you a question, you can download the document. It's a template. So in the poster, we have a template project charter with all the questions. Just download the Word document, fill in the blank, you're good to go. Now, once you have this project charter, one of the key things we found, one of the secret weapons, is an advisory board, a steering committee. Think like this. Security awareness is a product you're selling. The advisory board, the steering committee, is the voice of the customer. So in other words, it's just not you planning the awareness program. Because we can't know and understand how everyone thinks. One of the things you want to do is get people that you'll be reaching out to in your awareness program, have them, maybe 5 to 10 people, and they provide feedback on how you'll communicate, what you'll communicate, whom you'll communicate. So maybe somebody from different departments, somebody from accounts payable, somebody from, you know, tuition, reimbursement, all these different departments. And then they can help provide feedback. One of the things I recommend, think about it right now. Think about who in your faculty, who in your staff is the most technically clueless individual. Who is the individual most likely to click on anything? You all probably have somebody in mind right now. You may want them on your steering committee. So you can probably, you know, when you're developing information, you have them read this and they're like, full two-factor, what's this two-factor verification authentication thing? Hard drive? Have somebody, because you realize one of the things you have to do is you may have to make it very simple. Or you may realize you're dealing with a bunch of faculty who are all PhDs, and they'll go, well, this was written for, you know, a grade school kid. If you want me to read it, you're going to have to, you know, pump up the language and the volume. What would happened to us when we were working with a law firm. The law firm didn't like a lot of the content because it wasn't written at a high enough academic level for them. Also, what's really neat is with the steering committee is they can become ambassadors. It's just not you promoting the awareness program, but since it's part of their awareness program, they help promote it. What I tend to find is about 20% of your plan will change based on the input from the steering committee, the advisory board. And you'll be surprised. It's actually very easy to get volunteers. You put an email out, who wants to help develop the awareness program, things like that. And it's not the security guys that'll be in it. I mean, when I did this with one organization, first person was the director of accounts payable. Oh, yeah, we need this training. I'm on the steering committee. Bring it on. Marketing was on there and things like that. You tend to find in each group department, there's always one, at least one person that really, they don't know any of this stuff, but they want to learn. So a lot of times that's a really good resource to have. Is anybody doing something like this? Have a steering committee or an advisory board? It's something I really make. Canada, how is it working for you?
We have a partial program in place. What we're looking for more is feedback, is what we're giving them relevant to their users' needs and their users' knowledge.
So are they interested, not interested, involved in this event, steering committee?
They're interested but not involved.
Not interested but not involved. One of the things I've learned that you can help really get more interest is get somebody from very senior faculty, somebody, or somebody very senior in management, executive, and have them on the steering committee. They don't provide any information. They're not interactive. But when other people see this really high-level person on there, that tends to be very helpful. The other one is set expectations ahead of time. In other words, hey, folks, it's going to be an hour a week or an hour a month or stuff like that. You don't need to make it a fancy board meeting, just like a mail list. I think mail lists work quite well. But thank you. All right, so a steering committee. So really two things before you start planning your awareness program. A, have a project charter, identify common expectations, and then get that steering committee to arm you with input, the voice of the customer. Then we want to answer three key questions. Who, what, and how? So who are you targeting in your awareness program? Because different people may require different training. Obviously, you might be thinking, all faculty and staff, or all student employees. Students may require different training than the faculty and staff. You may have some other, specialized training for researchers. A common group that what I tend to find is this. Everybody takes basic, it's almost like basic training, a common foundation of awareness training. And then certain targets or roles require additional training. The one group that I tend to find that requires the most additional training is IT administrators and staff. What I tend to find is this. We in the security community are very technology focused, and we have the misconception if somebody is technical, they're secure. And unfortunately, the exact opposite is true. I see some heads going, oh yeah. The problem we have is these guys have highly privileged access, which actually exposes you to more risk. So do I have any network engineers, network operators, firewall folks here, or anything like that? Okay, a couple of hands going up. You ever been on those mail lists? The Cisco mail list, the routing mail list, the Juniper mail list, where you'll get actually a senior engineer going, hey, we got this new router. We're trying out a new routing protocol. We got a new routing config, but I just can't get my router to route. So, hey, folks, can you do me a favor? Here's an export of my entire router config. Anybody troubleshoot what's going on? And then people help out, and they answer him, and he's happy. Problem solved, network's routing. The problem is your university's entire network schematics, your entire network diagram, is now freely available on the Internet. I saw this all the time. Like I said, back in my Unix days, I was doing a lot of routing network, things like that. I mean, this is just one of the many examples. What about passwords? Are they using escalating privileges, or are they just logging in as admin? I had one university... we had one university that, I'm not going to name names here, but within like a 1 week period, all of their servers were compromised. And after some digging, we found out what the problem was is one of the administrators liked to surf websites of adult-oriented content while at work at school. And this adult-oriented website, one of the things it had is you can have free access to all of our content. You just need to create your own username and password. So you see where this is going. What username and password to use? Well, the university requires me to use a really strong, long, complex password. So I know it's a good password. So this is the perfect password for me to use at this adult-oriented content website. And he was also using the same password for administrative rights to all the servers. And all this obviously was, it was a black hat website harvesting username and passwords, and then they would just go back to the source, log in, boom, the entire university was owned because the administrator. So what I tend to find is, yes, we have standardized awareness training for everyone, but then you may have additional groups, and they may require additional training. Folks handling PHI require additional training for PHI. Student records require FERPA. Things along those lines, too. So that's why you want to identify what are the different target groups we're going to train ahead of time, because they may require different training. The second one is the what. Fewer topics, the better. This operating system can only remember so much, and the less you teach them, the more likely they are to remember, and the easier it is to reinforce throughout the rest of the year. So what you want to do is, instead of teaching them everything, which is what the auditors like, try to focus on the fewest topics possible, and then you're more likely to change those behaviors. The trick is, what few topics provide the greatest value? And then finally, how. And this is really important for engaging. Remember I just mentioned earlier here, asked how many people like their awareness program, and only a couple of hands stayed up. So one of the things what we tend to find is this. What you want to do, like we say here, is focus on the fewest topics possible. That way you're not boring people and they stay engaged. Engaged is the key challenge. And this is not just EDU. This is every industry. How do we develop training that is so engaging that people ask how their family, their friends, their kids can take the training? Because ultimately that's what they want. One of the key things we found is this, from an engagement perspective, is think about it. 70 to 80% of your awareness program applies to personal life and school life. All right, now passwords, email, mobile devices, social networking, all of these topics apply to both worlds. So when you communicate your awareness program, it's not, hey, you must do this to protect the university, you must do this to protect the schools, you must do this to protect yourself. And what you tend to find is you've now answered the question, what's in it for me? And people really want to take the training because it helps secure themselves. And what's really great is think about this. Now it's not like they have one set of behaviors at home and then another set of behaviors at school. Instead, security becomes part of their DNA, and they have the same behaviors everywhere. Remember the whole issue of BYOD? Well, if you're teaching them how to secure their mobile devices, how to secure their personal computers, you've just eliminated one of those top human risks. If you teach them how to use good passwords, things like that. But now this also then applies to the school world. So we're finding really good, really good engagement there. Another one is what we tend to find, especially with the younger generation, is creating content they can consume on their own. Getting people in a room like this is a wonderful way to communicate. It's very effective, interactive. It's just very, very hard to do. I tend to find when you schedule an awareness event, only about 10% people show up. They're not bad, they're busy. They have meetings, they have research, they have conference calls, vacation, they're out to lunch, they're sick. So what I tend to find, that one of the best ways to engage people is create content they can consume on their own. So videos, blogs, stickers, whatever works. And you'll tend to find different methods work for different targets. Senior faculty, one way may work better for them. You know, freshman students, different way. So what we want to do is really, and this is where that steering committee comes in, things like that. So let me just give you a couple examples of all the different ways that you can communicate. Here's just one, videos. Now, showing people video once a year is not going to change their behavior. What a video training, what's good about video training is you can establish a baseline. Give them what they need to know. Teach them about PHI, FERPA, teach them about passwords, teach them about mobile devices. And that lays, it's like the foundation. Think about, you know, you've just built a brand new computer and then you do all these steps to secure it, but it's going to quickly degrade in security over months if you're not patching or updating it. So in having like a, you know, in-group presentation like this or a video is one way to do that initial training. But then we need also ways to follow up. So things like newsletters, blogs, Twitter. What's interesting is Akamai actually has somebody called Security Penguin. And as part of their awareness program, they have a stuffed penguin. And every week, there's a new security hero at Akamai. And they get the security stuffed penguin on their desk. And you want to follow along and see who's the latest security hero? Follow Security Penguin on Twitter. The sticker, I actually got that on my laptop, is Facebook. Facebook is a very anti-corporate, very outgoing culture, similar to universities. A lot of organizations, you cannot use humor to engage people. Law firms, they don't like humor. Defense industry, they don't like humor. Government, they don't like humor. EDUs, people in general like humor. So humor, something like Darth Vader here, would work. What's great at Facebook, they encourage people to draw on the walls. The little mascot in the lower right-hand corner, he's a mascot for the United Arab Emirates, AE CERT. Yeah, I'm good friends over the AE CERT folks there. Salam. Or also a newsletter. If you don't have time, SANS puts out a free security awareness newsletter every month in 20 languages, including Arabic, by the way, and Farsi and Urdu. And so what's really neat is how many people are using Ouch? All right, if you're not, I really encourage it. It goes through a review. We have three different review boards. And I'll have the URL here at the end. Posters can be another fun way. Here's actually a recent one. This is another free resource from Securing the Human. You are a target. We explain all the different ways people are targeted by bad guys and why. One of the key things we find in an awareness program is before you start teaching them how to be secure, make sure they know they're a target. So you are a target is where we always start. And something like this explains all the different ways you can be targeted. Does anybody here follow Brian Krebs? This probably looks familiar, all right? I wrote to Brian because Brian Krebs posted this matrix of all the different ways your computer can be targeted and why. I said, Brian, this is awesome. Can I make a poster out of it? He said, hell yeah. So we did. In fact, so it's not like we're stealing his idea. Brian knows about it. His name's in the corner there. But download it. Print it. This is your resource for you to use. Now, bad guys change every year. All right? Technology changes every year. Requirements change every year. Your awareness program had better change at least once a year also. If nothing else, people don't want to watch the same training continuously, things like that. So make sure you're updating the content. What you want to do, too, is make sure you have some type of budget. Or the nice thing you students, you universities have is actually, A, you have free labor called grad students. They can help that. And also think about it. How many of your universities here have an arts or graphic design department? All right? Hey, free labor to help build your awareness program. One thing I found, you know, the whole idea of the starving artist, it's true. All right? These people are starving. They'll do anything for work. So maybe tap into that also. Finally, one of the things, remember that maturity matrix? We want to give you the metrics to measure the change in behavior and reduction in risk. So one of the things you're looking at here, once again, this is a template you can download from the Securing the Human website. It's part of that roadmap poster. It is a matrix, all these different ways to measure change in human behavior. Now, key thing on metrics. Folks, don't try to do them all right? That's a waste of time. Just two or three metrics that are really good at measuring change in behavior, and use those metrics. My favorite metric that we use at SANS, and I use with a lot of other organizations, is phishing. Who's doing phishing in their organization, where you send out emails and you phish your own people? One, two, oh, really, three? I would thought it would be more. I tend to see more in other industries. Is it just you're not getting management support, or you don't want to do it? Not authorized. All right. Here's an interesting way. There's services that do it. ThreatSim, PhishMe, Wombat. But if you want to try it, I've used them all. You can also use a URL shortener. So as I was mentioning earlier before we started, one of my jobs at SANS is I phish every SANS employee every month. And I've pretty much gotten everyone. All right? Sooner or later, everybody falls. But it can be a wonderful, wonderful way to reinforce things. And we do a couple of things that really helps buy-in. So people know, A, they know about the program. We announced it ahead of time. We don't announce each fish ahead of time, but we announced it ahead of time. But some of the key things we do, we tell people, when you fall victim, your boss will not know. Because we tend to find if people fell victim, they felt like it impacted their career. We said, only the security team knows. The only time your name gets reported is if you're a repeat failure and you represent a high risk. The other thing we do is when somebody falls victim, boom, they go to a landing page and are notified right away. Like, whoa! We found that the immediate response really helped the training. The third thing we do is 24 hours after every fish, I send out an email saying, the fish went out, it looked like this, this is how many people fell victim, and this is how you could have figured out it was a fish. The fourth thing we learned is what's really great about fishing is you can track what type of devices people are using to open fish. And so, quick question. At Sands, you can either have Mac OS X or you can have a Windows laptop. Since we can determine what device people use to open emails, which device operating system do you think was most popular, Mac or Windows? Neither. It was all iOS and Android. So you start learning some very interesting trends when you do these phishing assessments. I can do an entire hour just on phishing, but I think if we're running out of time. Oh, Margaret said we're out. All right, so I'm just going to go straight to the... So, folks, we're done? I don't want to leave you hanging. We have a bunch of free resources for you. The roadmap, the planning kit. The planning kit's a bunch of documents that come with the roadmap. If we're out of roadmap posters, let Krista know. She'll get you one. Monthly out... By the way, these are all here at securinghuman.org/resources. If you don't have time to do your own newsletter, we're doing the work for you. If you don't like the newsletter, you let me know because I'm in charge of it. We have an awareness video every month. We have awareness presentations. We have multiple posters, too. These are not the only posters. We got a bunch of other ones. And if you're interested, one of the things that SANS does is it does actually have a whole library of awareness video awareness training videos. And if you want a free trial and try them all out, if nothing else, just to get some ideas, let Krista know once again, and she'll help you out. Or fill out the cards that's in your seat and give them to her. And finally, this was a one-hour compressed version of a two-day class I teach. If you're actually interested in the two-day class, the URL is at the bottom. All right, Margaret said we are out of time. If you have any more questions, I'll be hanging around. Otherwise, lunch. Thanks.